Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Nima Drabbleby, and I'm delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Very often, it's easy to make a split-second decision about a topic, especially sensitive topics, without looking deeper and trying to put yourself in the position of the person being judged. It's sometimes unnecessary to do this in cases where right and wrong are outlined clearly. On the other hand, there are countless situations where a bit of empathy could change a lot. Vortex of Truth is an attempt to evoke that empathy in our listeners. Today's sketch will be exploring anxiety, which is a mental health disorder that has become very familiar to a large number of families and schools as the number of children diagnosed with anxiety steadily rises. I'm sure that many of us do know individuals who suffer with anxiety, but there's still a widespread belief that psychiatrists are overdiagnosing and that the anxiety faced by high school and college students can't really be that bad. But can it? We often fall into the trap of dismissing the troubles and difficulties faced by the youth because we recall our own childhoods, and when comparing those days to the present, it feels like things were a lot easier back then. And perhaps they were. But the difference is that we are blessed with perspective and forgetting that time causes. For our youth, the problems that they're facing are very real and current, and we need to keep that in mind before we write them off. Join me now as we take a peek into the life of Aisha, a high school girl known most commonly by the name Anxiety A. This sketch is more of a story, and I'm very excited for all of you to hear it. Anxiety A. Get up, get dressed, panic over being late, get there early, as always. Her friends laughed at her. They thought she was overdramatic. Anxiety A, they called her. Never happy unless she's panicking. They didn't get it. The panic didn't make her happy. It made her stomach clench. But she didn't know any other way. Healthy stress was good for you, or so her father said. Aisha couldn't tell the difference. To her, stress was stress, and all of it made her panic. She panicked over getting bad grades, over the way her hair never laid flat. Most of all, she panicked over losing her friends. Aisha had never been a popular girl. She'd been too busy studying. For a long time, she hadn't seen the point in making friends with the competition. At the end of the year, the girls she tried to be nice to would turn on her and make fun of her when they saw the ranking boards. But it all grown. In less than a year, they'd be competing with one another for the very last time, those who hadn't dropped out of the competition entirely. Aisha may have attended one of the most fast-paced schools in the country, but there were slackers everywhere. She'd grown to envy them and eventually befriend them. They didn't understand her, and she often found them rolling their eyes or laughing over something she'd said when they thought she wasn't looking. But they were her friends. She'd sought them out. It only made sense that she'd be the one to change when they accepted her. Except she hadn't changed. She hadn't mellowed or stopped competing. And so the laughter. It didn't matter. They only laughed because they didn't understand. Or so Aisha kept trying to convince herself. The truth was that she'd begun wondering if her two friends maybe had some kind of point. She was 18 years old, and she still panicked over being written up for being late. Even though it hadn't happened even once in her entire life. Even the day that her father had been rear-ended by some idiot who had been texting on his phone instead of paying attention to the actual road, Dad had dropped her off at school first and then taken the car to be fixed. Her dad understood. More rightly, her dad had been the one to explain. Without Aisha's father, she never would have understood the secret to success. Her mother didn't get it. Because she was extremely accomplished, to be sure. Her father would never have married her mother otherwise. But Mom always had a lackadaisical attitude towards things. She'd been the one to encourage Aisha to make friends and even neglect her homework to spend time with them. Mom thought that Aisha was heading for a nervous breakdown. But then Mom had been blessed with natural intelligence. Everything came so much easier to her. Aisha had never once seen Mom stress herself out over work. In fact, the only thing Mom did seem to stress out about was Aisha. First, Mom had stressed that Aisha was too studious and had insisted on enrolling her into a tennis academy. Aisha's father had gone along happily with this. Aisha herself had appreciated the discipline it had taught her. Her mother had strangely been less than thrilled with the addition of regular tennis classes on top of Aisha's extra tuition and provision, even though it had been her own idea. When Aisha had asked, all Mom had said was that she should have known better. Same, constantly trying to get her to take breaks and stop working herself to death before she was 20. Without her father pushing her, Aisha may have even given in. When her mother sat her down with that earnest look on her face, Aisha often found herself wanting to please Mom, even though she knew it would be to her eventual detriment. But her father's voice would always whisper in her ears, No pain, no gain, Aisha. You know better. And Aisha would decline, as she always did. Aisha, where'd you get lost? Reviving for next month's bio test already? Aisha forced a laugh at the common question. Something like that. Typical anxiety, eh? And don't talk about tests so early in the morning. You'll make me sick. After that came an invite. Do you want to hit the mall with us? Aisha shook her head. I have to study. She has to study, like last week, and the month before that, and the decade before that. You come out of the womb with a book in your hand, Aisha. Aisha sighed. You never go anywhere with us, Aisha. Don't you get bored holding it up in your room all the time? Yes, sometimes she did. Would it really hurt, just this once? Aisha opened her mouth impulsively. Oh, Aisha, her dad's voice rang in her ears. Without pressure, you don't get diamonds, remember? What's more important? I'll take a rain check, Aisha said regretfully. I don't have the free time. Are you sure? Not even just an hour. I can't. That's my girl, Aisha's father whispered in her ears. Well done, Aisha. Aisha's stomach grumbled audibly. She grimaced and prayed that the sound of the car's engine had baffled it. She really didn't want to have to explain to her father why she hadn't eaten, and explain she would have to. Dad was constantly reminding her how important good nutrition was for her brain. She'd just begun to relax back against the plush seat when she met her dad's eyes in the rearview mirror, and knew instantly that he'd caught her. Sharp brown eyes frowned at her for a second before Dad returned his attention to the road. Did you not get enough food today? It would be so easy to say yes and let Dad interrogate Sonia to help her instead of her. But Aisha's conscience pricked her. Sonia shouldn't have to take the blame for her actions. I decided to fast today, she blurted out. Lying is a disgusting habit. Only the weak hide behind falsehoods. Are you weak, Aisha? Yes, Aisha put miserably. Yes, I am. I don't know if I'm happy with you fasting while you have work to cope with, Dad frowned. It's an admirable habit to cultivate, but I don't want you too weak to concentrate on your teachers. But won't it be good practice for Ramadan, Aisha asked, seeming nervously, innocently. Her dad paused to think and gave her an approving look. I hadn't thought about that. Good point, Aisha. All right, you can trial it for now, he conceded, turning into the garage. But if you begin to feel weak, or if I find your grades slipping, it stops immediately. Well done, her dad smiled later, handing her her backpack from the boot. I'm proud that you started to take the initiative. And Aisha felt even guiltier. There was nothing for it now. She would have to start fasting. Perhaps the increased worship would help to make up for the lies in some way. Hopefully. She muttered something indistinct about homework and escaped to her bedroom where she tried to lose herself in the most difficult set of exercises her math textbook had to offer. It didn't help. Her fingers itched to power on her phone and open up Instagram or Snapchat. She had little to no presence on either platform, lacking not only time to fool around with them, but also any fragment of an exciting social life that would make her want to post anything. All Aisha did on social media was look at what everyone else was doing. She knew it was stupid and that it was making her jealous, but she couldn't stop herself from indulging in the guilty pleasure a few times a week. If she couldn't live a fun life, at least she could look at other people doing it. And maybe, just maybe, if she closed her eyes and tried hard enough, she could imagine herself right there alongside them. Aisha, her mom called, what felt like only moments later. Come and break your fast, baby. Break her fast? Aisha glanced at the digital clock at the top right of her phone and felt a jolt of shock run through her. She'd been sitting mindlessly for the past hour. Her cheeks burned with shame as she caught sight of the stack of books that lay untouched on her desk. How responsible. Dad would be ashamed of her. Her stomach clenched. Aisha, Mom called again. Hurry up, please. Coming, she yelled in the direction of her door. Hastily, she shoved her cell phone underneath her pillow. She'd eat quickly and start work as soon as she was done, she promised herself. She'd stay up all night if she had to. Her mother took one look at her the next morning and immediately ordered her back up to bed. Don't you dare come back down for at least another 3 hours. You look like a zombie. I have work to do, Aisha protested weakly. Work can wait, her mother was unsympathetic. If you carry on like this, you'll make yourself sick and then there will be no work for you at all. She made a sure motion with her hand. Scoot. Aisha scooted. And don't break out those textbooks in your room either, Mom added. Aisha, mind me. Yes, Mom, I should acquiesce reluctantly. Maybe she could do doors in her head instead. Asha shoved her notepad and tape underneath herself when she heard the door start to open. She settled herself back against the headboard and tried to look innocent. Hi, she speaks out. Hi, Mom narrowed her eyes. Hand it over. Asha gave her the notepad. Mom shook her head ruefully. I think I'm the only mother in the world who has to restrict schoolwork. You don't have to, Asha pointed out. You could let me study. Mom sat down next to her and brushed her hair away from her face. I do have to. There's more to life than studying, baby. Friends, family, fun. There's nothing wrong with any of that. And I can constantly deprive yourself and then regret it later. Mom never understood. I like learning, Asha reminded her. And Dad doesn't think there's anything wrong with it. Mom looked sad for a minute. I know you like it, baby. And I'm not saying you need to stop. Just that you need to ease up a little. No more studying today, okay? Asha immediately opened her mouth to protest, and Mom held up a slim hand. Non-negotiable, she said firmly. You'll survive until tomorrow. Aisha couldn't stifle her panic. She'd not only missed out on an entire Friday evening's worth of studying, but now her mother was insisting that she waste her Saturday morning as well. She cast a horrified look at her father, expecting him to jump in and save her, but to her surprise, he seemed to be considering her mother's insane request. I suppose we can afford it, he pronounced finally, after mulling it over throughout the process of drinking his morning coffee. Just as long as Aisha makes up for it this evening with some thorough revision. Mom was gracious in her triumph, simply inclining her head in a graceful nod. But Aisha's own reaction was a different story. Her mouth hung open unattractively as she gazed between her parents. What just happened, she wondered, feeling almost dizzy. Dad never gives in to Mom. It's a nice day out for one, her mother promised her, her eyes gleaming with satisfaction. Even once we drop your father off at the airport this afternoon, you can disappear back into your textbooks, if you even still want to. Of course Aisha would want to. She wanted to crack open her physics textbook right there at the dinner table, but it had been a standing rule since before she was born that reading material of any sort was banned from the dining table. Mom had begun to enforce that rule when she'd seen her husband habitually open a journal and lose himself in its pages, seeming to forget the very existence of his new wife. Aisha had only recently fought and won the right to review notes with her meals during the downtime. And even then, the very sight of them was enough to cause her mother to develop a pinched, annoyed set to her mouth. Just this once, Dad added, it won't become a habit. But this was poor comfort that had helped soothe the colony of butterflies that had taken residence in the pit of Aisha's stomach. Mom ignored this. Is that all you're going to eat, Aisha? Aisha glanced down at her spool-laden plate. She stalled, trying to think up an excuse that would get her off the hook. You can't eat that at all, Dad cut in, frowning heavily. You'll get a headache. Are you feeling ill? He got up to feel Aisha's forehead, checked her color, and then efficiently moved down to examine the glands by her throat. Open your mouth, let me see your throat, he directed. Don't overwhelm her, Mom cautioned, putting a hand on her husband's shoulder. Aisha, what's wrong? Nothing, Aisha said hurriedly. I'm just tired still. Mom smiled in relief. Go take a little nap then. I'll cook away for you and you can eat before we leave. Okay, thank you, Aisha said. Mom reached over and gave her a gentle hug before kissing the side of her forehead. Rest well. As she headed up the stairs, Aisha saw her parents embrace out of the corner of her eye. She quickened her steps, feeling as she always did when she caught them being overly affectionate, like an intruder. It had always comforted her to know that her parents, unlike those of so many of her peers, loved each other even when no one was watching. Aisha had never suffered the agony of worrying that her home would be split in two, like Leia had, or the trauma of watching them throw things at one another, like another of her classmates had complained about. The boy had been rolling his eyes as he made fun of his parents' antics, but Aisha imagined that he still cared. How could anyone not when the foundation they'd been built on was crumbling? Speaking of foundations, she thought irritably as she looked at her ready and waiting desk, what on earth has happened to Dad? Her father had always taught her that success was built on the foundations of determination, consistent work, and honed intellect. She couldn't fathom why he would suddenly give in to her mother and relax the principle he loved this for so long. Is something wrong? Were her parents preparing her for bad news of some kind? Aisha's imagination ran wild, spinning wilder and wilder scenarios, making her heart race and her stomach twist itself into giant knots. Anything could have happened. Someone could be dying, or sick, so they could be bankrupt. Had kids lost his job at the hospital. Maybe that was why he was traveling so suddenly, because he needed to find a new job. Or maybe something had happened to one of Arsha's grandparents. She hadn't seen them in 2 years, not since they'd gotten too old to make the journey across the country, and she'd begun the holiday work that meant she and her parents couldn't make the trip themselves. Mom often went to visit both her parents and her in-laws, and Dad popped in on them whenever he made work trips. But Aisha had insisted from the 10th grade that she could no longer lose the opportunities that the internships and classes she took would let her. Mom had been furious, of course, but Dad had faced her series, and Aisha did Skype all four of her grandparents at least once a week. It had seemed like a fair compromise at the time, but now, with the prospect that one of them was ill dangling over her head, it seemed incredibly stupid. Her heartbeat pounded in her ears as her thoughts raced. What if it wasn't even one of her grandparents who got an ill? What if Dad himself was sick and was flying out to see a specialist? He wasn't getting any younger, and a month ago he'd been complaining about his back bothering him. What if something had gone seriously wrong? Dad could die. Her dad could die. So could her mom. Both of them could die and leave her and... No. Don't think about that. Don't think about being alone and having to do everything and figure things out and just concentrate on something else. What are all the metals on the periodic table? Aisha listed them in her head, mouthing the answers to herself. Started at boron and finished at tellurium. Next, she went on to the noble gases. When that didn't work, she took the notepad and pen that stayed on her nightstand and drew out the whole table. Twice. Aisha, are you feeling better? Her mother breathed in. Oh, Mom's face fell. Aisha, really, I think your father and I need to have a talk about this. You're becoming obsessed. Aisha clutched the notepad to her chest. Is Dad going to die? She asked her small voice. What? Mom's eyes widened comically. Why would you say such a thing? Is he? Aisha demanded, feeling her heart rate begin to increase again. Aisha, no. Mom came further into her bedroom and sat down, putting an arm around her. Where are you coming from? Did you have a nightmare? The comfort made her eyes burn. I don't understand what's going on, she confessed. Why are we going out so suddenly? Are you going to tell me some bad news? Mom put her hand to her forehead. That's what caused this. Yeah, I just wanted to spend some time with you and your dad. You used to go out so often and make memories and simply stop. I miss it. Oh, with Mom patiently explaining in that even tone she always used, Aisha felt overwrought and stupid. So, she checked. So, everyone's fine. Nani and Nana and Ma and Papa, all of them are well. No one is sick. Your Ma has hypertension, Mom reminded her, but she's managing it. And Dad checks up on all your grandparents regularly. As well as we can make them. Aisha knew this. She'd more than once listened to her dad taking one of her grandparents through the dosage instructions of a new medication they'd just been prescribed to make certain it would be taken correctly. In her panic, all rational thought had been wiped from her mind. It was somehow as though everything her mother was reminding her was brand new information that she'd never before been told. I think you need to eat, Mom declared finally. Hunger can make people think strangely. Come down and have something, and maybe your dad actually should take you over. You'll pay better than I like. Aisha didn't much want to move, but her mother was insistent. She was ushered into the kitchen and made to sit at one of the counter stools right under her mother's watchful eye and served a heaping plateful of food. Eat as much as you can, Mom instructed, preempting her complaints about the amount of food. Whatever you can't finish, leave. Aisha played with her food while her mother moved between the kitchen and pantry, putting together a basket and hauling out the old picnic supplies. The sight of the flowing blankets and dishes made her smile, remembering being little and determinedly trying to sneak the crust off the sandwiches to the birds. Mom and Dad must have known what she was doing, but they'd played dumb. The birds, however, had not been quite so cooperative, running away from the loud, clumsy child she'd been and refusing to accept her offering. Wait, picnic? Mom, where are we going? She asked curiously. Dad's flight is leaving in a few hours, isn't it? At 2, he told her. Mother glanced up, tucking a lock of hair behind her ear. 7. Aisha blinked. So Dad changed his flight a little while ago. His work will only start on Monday, so there's no real need for him to go down so soon anyway. He wanted to settle in a little early and meet a few people, but he can easily do that tomorrow as well. Today, it's my family. So we're going on a picnic. Despite herself, as she was pleased, she would lose even more time, no doubt. But the part of her that was still the little girl who spent hours picking flowers and making daisy chains sat up in excitement. Yes, a picnic. And if you're good and don't forget to put the textbook in your handbag, Mom teased, we might go for ice cream as well. Aisha's appetite had suddenly come back. She cleaned her plate, eating at the time of the day, while her mind filled with memories. Where's Daddy? She asked her mother going to say. Is he ready? You're suddenly eager, Mom. Go and find him. I'm all done getting everything packed. We can leave as soon as Chunky come back down. With your dishes, I'll wash them for you, she added, seeing Aisha's impatience. Aisha was halfway upstairs when a thought struck her, and she went back down to ask her mother for a few slices of bread. She'd never been able to make friends with birds when she was little, but perhaps to be more willing now that she knew how to sit still for a minute. And there we have it. That is Anxiety A. That was a bit of a roller coaster, wasn't it? The point of this sketch was to try and shed some light on how the mind can work when struggling to beat back the intrusive voice that is anxiety. I'm sure you may have gotten a bit frustrated with Aisha, and you only have to listen to the zigzag thing for about 15 minutes. Imagine living full-time with these kinds of intrusive thoughts. Anxiety is a disease like any other, and it has symptoms and side effects which need to be managed and borne. Aisha doesn't know quite what's happening to her. She's felt like this for long enough that she believes this anxious person is who she is, enough that she's accepted the moniker of Anxiety A without ever considering that she might have a condition that's inhibiting her from living life to the fullest extent. That's something that a lot of people struggle with today, and it's one of the reasons that belittling and ignoring the true damage which can be caused by mental disorders, like teasing and incorrectly naming emotions like worry and sadness, as anxiety and depression can be very damaging. Very innocent, I know, but this kind of unconscious brushing off can lead to sufferers also brushing off their own symptoms and continuing to live with untreated conditions that greatly impact their quality of life. It's perhaps something to think about before we start calling ourselves depressed when we're just sad and self-diagnose ourselves with anxiety because of stress and worries. I am by no means saying that anyone's emotions aren't valid, but there's a difference between feeling an emotion and struggling with a long-term condition. Today's sketch was very, very surface in terms of what anxiety can do. To be honest, anxiety can get you stuck so far inside your own head that you're afraid to walk outside. It can tell you that you're a terrible person and that no one that you love actually loves you back. It can do all sorts of really, really horrible things. Aisha's anxiety manifests as her father's voice in her head, which is quite damaging, and perhaps as a result of her father's very understandable focus on academic success, as many parents are in our country. Unfortunately, Aisha's anxiety plays into that that request from her father, and causes her to think that her academic success is the core of her being and the only thing that matters, to the extent that she would brush off her grandparents, brush off her friends, and brush off even her mother when people tried to associate with her or take her out of the little cage that she built for herself around her books. While it is true that our academic success is very, very important, especially in the matric year, I would think that most students do understand the concept of still having some fun and juggling while they're studying. It's of no use for us to be so beholden to our belief that being at your desk and studying the whole day is a good thing. It's very, very important for us to also have some kind of understanding that we need to balance. We need to live in moderation as a standard teacher. Well, we are going to speak to a trained professional just now to try and shed some further light on anxiety as a disorder and the diagnosis and management of it, so please stay tuned after we have this very short ad break. Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My guest for today is Claudine Adar. Claudine is currently completing her master's in educational psychology, and she has 3 years of experience working as a counselor and victim support worker at a police station. She currently works at a school for learners with autism and other severe behavior disorders, and we will be talking to her today about the anxiety disorder. Welcome to our show, Claudine, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Claudine, the first thing that I would like to ask you is that As we have a really rapidly rising number of diagnoses of anxiety cropping up in high school and even sometimes primary school students, often a lot of people do question whether it's our society that is creating anxious children. Do you believe this, and to what extent do you think that the fact that we're no longer so unwilling to speak about mental illness is a factor in the rising number of diagnoses? Do you think that it's possible that there were just as many sufferers in the past and those people simply kept silent about the issues or perhaps ignored?
I just wanted to start off by saying thank you for laying the foundation in terms of the difference between just worrying and then anxiety. I think so often we get the two confused, you know, or like you said, it's used so easily that, you know, oh, I have so much anxiety that it's almost become commonplace. Whereas I do 100% believe that we do have an increased number of diagnoses that's going on. Whether it's because we are now so open to it and whether it's become unstigmatized to a certain extent, or whether it's because people are actually becoming more and more anxious, or, you know, we can't really say. But what we do know is that society demands a lot more. And I think if we just go back to Aisha's story, we look at some of the very big role players in the creation of anxiety and perhaps even anxiety disorders. You know, we look at social relationships, we look at demands from society, we look at social media,
right,
which has begun to play a huge role in how especially teenagers view themselves and their lives and what they expect or what they think life should be like.
Definitely, I completely agree with you.
So there's this whole extra layer of pressure that is being experienced in this age that hasn't been experienced before.
Right. Okay, that's very interesting. It sounds like we don't really know exactly what it is, but we do know that there is a problem that we do need to treat. And on that note, do you think that it's ever going to be possible to cure anxiety, whether we do it through allopathic medicine, homeopathic medicine, or these number of diets that seem to be circulating through social media, or is it a lifelong condition?
So it depends on how it is treated. You know, there's multiple factors that you can use. So, yes, there is medication that can be used. There's different types of medication. There's different remedies that can be used as well. But all of these go hand in hand with a balanced lifestyle, a balanced diet, exercise, you know, and overall wellness. So I don't think necessarily that it's to cure anxiety, but in order to increase overall well-being, you know, there are certain things that we need to do, like drink more water, get lots of fresh air, eat healthier. All of these things do have an effect on the body, and as we do know, anxiety also has an effect on the body.
Yes,
so if you're looking at your psychosomatic symptoms, where your heart starts racing, you know, you're sweaty, or your brain, you know, your mind kind of seems either like your thoughts are racing or it's a bit muddied. All of these things help. So if you're exercising, if you're exercising, it helps with your heart rate.
Right.
Do you get what I'm saying? So it makes your heart stronger. So when your heart starts racing, you know, it's easier to manage. You know, you're looking at your diet. So it's been known that specific foods help release specific hormones and those kind of things. You know, if we had enough time, we could have gone into it. But eating stuff like almonds helps to reduce the number of or the amount of cortisol in your blood, which is a lot to do with your adrenal system and anxiety and that kind of a thing. So if you're looking at living a healthy lifestyle, chances of your anxiety reducing to the point where you no longer need medication, it is possible. So if you're looking at not taking your medication, then yes. But unfortunately, the way the brain is wired, if you are prone to anxiety, not worry, anxiety, then unfortunately it's something that you have to consider lifelong.
I see. Okay. So what it's just some of what you've been saying. It's a holistic treatment that we have to look at. It's your mind, your body, your emotions, and everything needs to be taken into consideration as one for you to find yourself with, you know, a good quality of life.
Yes, yes. It's not just about taking a pill. It's about teaching yourself healthy coping mechanisms. You know, it's about knowing what your triggers are. It's about seeing yourself in situations and realizing, oh my goodness, I'm about to start spiraling. Mm-hmm. You know, like we saw with Aisha, it was so many times when it was related to schoolwork, the pressure that she would put on herself. So what she would need to learn then is coping mechanisms, because what she was doing is she was using school in order to cope with other kinds of anxiety, but that was her obsession.
Yes.
So she would need to then find different coping mechanisms like breathing or meditation or prayer to help her through. So she was almost there with the fasting, but we know that she got cornered herself into that.
Right. Okay, and do you think that the traditional talk therapy is a good idea for people who are suffering with anxiety? I know that from what I've personally researched, there's sometimes a lot of shame associated with the anxious feelings and things like that. But do you think that a sufferer should try to push through those and then try and seek professional help with a psychotherapist?
Yes, I definitely do think that. You know, what people don't realize is that when you're going for therapy, 90% of your improvement or 90% of the benefit is just the relationship between you and your therapist. So whether you're seeing a counselor, a social worker, a psychologist, wherever you're receiving your therapy from, if you don't connect with that person and you don't build that rapport, if you don't have a solid relationship, you may as well flush your money down the toilet.
I see. The
relationship is what allows you to find that safe space to be able to open up and to be able to confront yourself, which is sometimes what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting to me, because so much of what I've heard from people is that talk therapy doesn't work because they don't trust their therapist. So that's what you're suggesting says to me, that you need to look for the right therapist who matches you, and it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, we always say that, you know, when someone says, oh, I've tried psychology, it doesn't work. I would say, no, you've tried a psychologist and he or she didn't work for you. But that doesn't mean that talking through your difficulties is not going to help.
That's really interesting. That's a really nice way to reframe the idea. And I hope that anybody who's listening who has been dealing with anxiety and has thought that talk therapy might not be for them might be motivated to, you know, try again with someone different. And I think that, you know, when we're talking about going to therapists and things like that, it's very important to do some research. Don't just trust that every single therapist is exactly the same. You do need to, you know, unfortunately try out a couple before you find the right one, maybe.
Yes, and it's okay to ask people, you know, what standpoint do you come from? You know, like, what do you think about anxiety? What are your treatment plans? You know, that kind of a thing. It's okay on, you know, the first date to say,
right,
to just get straight to the point and to say, okay, so how do you think anxiety should be treated? Or what's your stance on anxiety? So that from the onset, you know whether you click or not. You know, I know most therapists aren't going to give personal information because it's not what we're there for. But we should be able to give you information in terms of what our stance is on anxiety and what we think is the best route to treat it.
Okay, that's very, very interesting. Thank you so much for sharing that. And just quickly, because we're about to run out of time, you know, the loved ones of a person with anxiety are very often at a loss as to how to treat them and how to be of support. And do you have any quick tips for those individuals who really mean well but might not be doing the right thing?
I think the most important thing is to listen. So we tend to, like Aisha's friends did, she's so overdramatic, or, oh, she just panics for everything. She's such a worrywart, you know. So we need to listen, and we need to be a bit more attentive as to whether someone is actually dealing with some hectic things or whether the person just needs someone to talk to. So it boils down once again to relationships. It boils down to being able to trust someone. So if it's someone that you trust and it's someone that you know trusts you, it's okay to just broach the conversation and to say, look, I noticed that, you know, you've been looking a bit frazzled, or I've heard you mention being late or stressing about a few things a few times. You know, it's been happening over and over. Do you want to talk? Are you okay? What kind of space are you in? Because sometimes just being able to talk to someone really does relieve the pressure. And then once someone does open up to you, like if someone says, you know, I think I have anxiety, not to start dosing out advice, you know, like, maybe you should run more, maybe you should sleep more, you know, to find out from them, what do you think the cause could be, you know, because ultimately as therapists, that's what we do. We ask questions to help people discover their own solutions. So instead of saying to you, oh, you know what, I think you should just change your diet, mm-hmm. it's good to ask, you know, so what do you think, do you think your diet might be contributing to it, and have that person then figure it out for themselves.
Right, okay, that's really amazing. And just finally, just because what you said to me has made me think of something else, is it possible is it likely that someone with anxiety who's been approached by the family member or someone who loves them might not be so willing to share? And in that case, you know, is it possible that, you know, the person who's trying to reach out just needs to keep aware of the fact that it's a very intensely personal thing and not be offended?
Yes, yes. I think, you know, we have the South African Depression and Anxiety Group.
Mm-hmm.
That can help people talk through things individually, you know. But also if there's someone in your space, if there's someone that you can trust, it's good to talk to them. But it's also okay if you're not in the space to just open up and talk to someone, you know, and to share. So there are different avenues that can be used. But like you're saying, it is an extremely personal thing. And as much as we're a lot more open about it, there still is somewhat of a stigma, especially in the workplace. You know, will this person perform? Will they do what they're supposed to?
Yeah.
So it's still very much private, even though it is a lot less stigmatized. So I would say, you know, that we need to be more mindful of people's boundaries and personal spaces. And then if the relationship is good enough, go ahead. But if there's any doubt whatsoever about the relationship, then I would say just don't do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Claudia. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you very, very much again for joining us today and sharing, you know, some of your insights and some of your knowledge with us. And inshallah, I will have you on the show again very soon. Have a lovely day further.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good day. Bye.
All right, JazakAllah khair to everyone who's joined in on today's show. This was Vortex of Truth, and we were talking about anxiety. And inshallah, we'll be back next week, Friday, to tackle yet another issue. Assalamu alaikum, and have a wonderful afternoon.